This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Freenas, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about channel marketing in calendar weeks 15 and 16. Freenas is a B2B market research partner helping ICT and tech providers identify niche channel partners by compressing the full journey from identification to qualified first meeting into 4 to 5 weeks. You can find more info in the description.
Right. So if you're a B2B marketing professional listening to this deep dive right now, you probably have a spreadsheet open somewhere.
Oh, definitely. Or a dashboard.
Exactly. A dashboard that claims your partners are driving, you know, millions of dollars in pipeline.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you were to actually audit those numbers, like really look closely at the underlying data, you'd probably find that a massive chunk of that pipeline is a complete hallucination.
It's totally fake. And that is exactly what we are tearing down today. Over the last 2 weeks, calendar weeks 15 and 16, we've pulled the absolute most critical channel marketing insights from LinkedIn.
No fluff, just the actual mechanics of what's working.
Right. We're going to look at how to turn ecosystem motions from a sort of nice-to-have side project into your primary predictable revenue engine.
And that transition, by the way, from nice-to-have to core infrastructure, that is the defining shift in the market right now.
Yeah, organizations are finally demanding that ecosystems operate with the exact same rigor as direct sales.
But the friction there is that you can't just mandate revenue from an ecosystem when the foundational mechanics of how you track things are fundamentally broken.
Which brings us right into our first major theme from the sources, revenue discipline.
Yes, revenue discipline. I mean, we have to start here. There is this persistent habit of confusing partner engagement with actual mathematical pipeline.
Oh, I see this all the time. Teams are high-fiving over a partner sending a Slack message asking for a pitch deck.
Right. Or they co-host one webinar and suddenly that gets logged as a sourcing signal.
But engagement is not revenue. Jamie Arc called this out recently on LinkedIn, and he described it perfectly as fluffing the funnel.
Fluffing the funnel. That's so accurate.
That, Eric basically argues that real partner pipeline is math, not magic. It needs to be a strict formula.
Like X number of partners actively co-selling, right?
Exactly. Touching Y specific accounts per week and converting at Z percent to qualified pipeline. If you can't articulate that specific math, you do not have a forecast.
No, you have a wish list. And getting to that math requires an entirely different operational mindset. Rob Moyer was talking about this. He describes it as shifting into operator mode.
Operator mode, right. So treating it like RevOps.
Exactly. He argues that partnership teams need to adopt the exact same discipline as RevOps. So that means you have to physically engineer your CRM to handle partner attribution.
Which nobody wants to do because it's hard.
It is. But you have to build tiered attribution frameworks. You have to restructure into POD models.
Wait, explain the POD models in this context.
So it's where marketing, sales, and alliances aren't siloed anymore. They operate as a single cross-functional unit dedicated to a specific partner portfolio.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because, I mean, if the finance department looks at your Salesforce instance and they can't trust the data, your partner program essentially doesn't exist.
It's just a vanity project at that point. Let's dig into why that CRM engineering is so critical, because I think a lot of partner deals actually fail right in the middle of the process.
Oh, the middle is where deals go to die.
Managing the middle of a partner deal without a connected tech stack is like, it's like two construction crews building a bridge from opposite sides of a river, but one is using metric measurements and the other is using imperial.
That's a great analogy.
Right. They're both working incredibly hard, but they're never going to connect in the center. Orlando Nato highlighted this exact structural flaw.
Yeah, you get all that excitement at the beginning, the handshakes, the shared vision.
Yep, and then intense focus at the very end when revenue is about to close. But the middle is just a black hole. Unclear ownership, fuzzy handoffs between the alliances team and the direct sales team.
And literally zero inspection cadence to see who's actually driving the next step.
Yeah, exactly. And that middle management failure is almost always a reflection of disjointed architecture. George Vitko was talking about this. He's audited hundreds of these partnership programs.
And what did he find?
He noted that an alarming number of them quietly die because the entire motion literally lives in a Notion document or a static spreadsheet.
Oh, man. You cannot run an ecosystem out of a Notion doc.
You just can't. When you rely on static documents, the handoff inevitably breaks. Vitko points out you need a purpose-built stack.
So functionally, what does that look like?
He says it looks like using a tool like Crossbeam for secure account mapping, where you're hashing emails and matching lists in a data escrow so you aren't just guessing where the accounts overlap.
Right. And then that data has to route directly into a central CRM like HubSpot or Salesforce to actually trigger the co-sale motion.
While a platform like PartnerStack handles the actual enablement and the payout,
yeah,
if you don't have that mechanical plumbing in place, you don't really have a partnership problem. You have a systems architecture problem.
Okay, so let's say you fix the plumbing. The CRM is engineered, the account mapping is automated, the metrics finally align.
The dream scenario.
Right. But the immediate temptation then is to just turn around and blast out invitations to 500 potential partners to scale the ecosystem.
Which is the fastest way to break the exact system you just built.
Exactly. The impulse to go wide and scale assumptions is a massive trap. The data strongly suggests you have to do the exact opposite.
You have to test the plumbing first.
Yeah.
Akriti Srivastava framed this brilliantly on LinkedIn by taking the MVP concept from product development and applying it to alliances.
Minimum viable partnerships.
Minimum viable partnerships, exactly. Because the traditional approach is to invest heavy resources up front, right? Build the portals, draft all the collateral.
And then just hope and pray they can actually sell.
Right. Srivastava argues for running a literal pipeline test first. Take just one or two real active deals. Run the co-sell motion manually with the partner.
Just to see where the friction is.
Exactly. Find the friction in the contract, in the handoff, in the customer conversation.
Mm.
Prove that this specific partner profile can actually create and close pipeline before you spend a single dime trying to scale them.
And the granular testing is critical because the mechanics of how different partners make money vary wildly.
They really do. You can't build a single monolithic enablement process for everyone.
David Huber broke this down recently, showing why a one-size-fits-all playbook actively creates channel conflict.
Give me an example.
Well, take a global system integrator, a GSI. Their economic engine is built on large-scale transformation projects. They want massive services pull through.
Right. So if your software doesn't require, like, deep implementation consulting, they probably won't touch it.
Exactly. Whereas a managed service provider, an MSP, operates in a completely different reality.
Entirely different. They need multi-tenant capabilities.
Right. If an MSP has to log in and out of 50 different instances to manage 50 different clients, your product is a liability to their margins. They need operational efficiency.
And recurring revenue.
Yes. And then you have independent software vendors, ISVs, who scale through product alignment. They need a better together integration story where the two tools just share data natively.
So if your partner program doesn't mechanically support how each of these specific models generates value, you just become overhead to them.
You're just a nuisance. And supporting those distinct models takes heavy lifting internally. Greg Portnoy laid out a very sobering rule of thumb regarding resource allocation.
Oh, I saw this, the 30% rule.
Yeah. If you expect 30% of your company's revenue to come from partners, you have to dedicate 30% of your internal resources to partnerships.
Which is a tough pill to swallow for a lot of execs.
It is. That means 30% of your direct sales team's time is spent co-selling. 30% of your marketing budget goes to joint go-to-market content.
And 30% of customer success is dedicated to uncovering mutual expansion opportunities. Ecosystems are not just a passive lead channel you turn on.
They require serious infrastructural commitment. And we are seeing massive market signals validating that exact level of commitment.
Like what?
Well, Will Taylor highlighted a pivotal shift recently with AppDirect acquiring PartnerStack.
Oh, yeah, that was huge news.
It wasn't just a standard merger. It's really a fundamental rewiring of B2B commerce.
Let's unpack the mechanics of that for the listener. Why does combining those two specific companies actually change the buyer journey?
Okay, so AppDirect provides the infrastructure for how B2B software is provisioned and transacted. So literally the shopping cart and subscription management.
Right.
And PartnerStack manages the affiliate data, the partner tracking, the incentive payouts. By merging them, you are connecting the transaction data directly with the incentive data in real time.
So the partner is no longer just handing off a lead and hoping for a check in 90 days.
Exactly. Their integration is part of the native checkout flow. The ecosystem partner essentially becomes the storefront.
Wow.
When infrastructure providers consolidate the commerce layer with the partner layer like that, it proves that ecosystem-led growth is becoming the primary chassis for B2B revenue.
So the technology is maturing, the data is closing the loop, and the market expectation is clearly shifting from vague promises to highly tracked, proven revenue.
Yes.
And that actually brings us to the biggest players in the room, the hyperscalers, because they are enforcing this shift aggressively.
Oh, they're not messing around anymore.
If you think your internal CRM discipline needs work, wait until you see what AWS and Microsoft are mandating. The days of earning a badge, putting it on your website, and waiting for leads are entirely dead.
Totally dead.
Yeah.
Latif Amlani shared a major update regarding AWS's new 2026 rules.
What are the new rules?
To even renew a specialization, AWS is now requiring actual launched ACE opportunities tied to specific solutions.
And we should probably clarify what launched ACE opportunities functionally means for anyone who doesn't live in the AWS portal.
Right. So ACE stands for APN Customer Engagement.
Yeah.
It's AWS's portal. AWS is no longer just asking if you passed a technical certification.
They want proof.
They are demanding that you formally register the co-sell pipeline in their specific system, proving with hard data that you are actively working a deal together.
So if that pipeline isn't logged and validated in ACE, you essentially do not exist to them.
You lose your visibility. You lose your marketplace benefits. Proof is officially replacing promises.
But securing that proof means you have to navigate their internal hierarchy, which is, I mean, let's be honest, it's incredibly complex.
It's amazing. Pete Tsaris actually calls this the zoo framework.
The zoo framework.
Yeah, it's a mental model for ISVs to understand the hyper-specific roles within a behemoth like AWS. You have to map your ideal customer profile directly to the specific AWS roles that are already selling into that exact same customer base.
Right, because an AWS account manager has completely different compensation incentives than, say, an ISV success manager.
Exactly. If you pitch the wrong rep, or you just don't understand how your deal accelerates their specific quota retirement, your co-sell motion is going to stall immediately.
And Microsoft operates with a very similar level of rigor right now. Deidre Jones pointed out that Microsoft partners frequently fail, but it's rarely because their underlying technology is flawed.
Why do they fail then?
She says they fail because of an evidence gap. They show up without structured customer win wires.
Ah, win wires.
Yeah. And a win wire is not a marketing fluff piece. It is a technical, structured document that proves to Microsoft field sellers exactly how a joint solution was deployed and what specific Microsoft consumption metrics it drove.
Because without that technical proof of execution, Microsoft sellers just won't risk bringing you into their accounts.
Exactly. Which totally reframes how companies should be spending their marketing dollars. I mean, think about it. A lot of organizations will drop hundreds of thousands of dollars to send a massive team and set up a giant booth at an AWS summit.
Oh, all the time.
But if these hyperscalers require surgical, registered pipeline, and specific technical win wires, then just standing on a trade show floor pitching your product to anyone who walks by seems like a massive misallocation of capital.
It really is.
Yeah.
And Andrew Morris addressed this exact disconnect. He says the reason most partners attend these summits and walk away with zero converting pipeline is because they treat it like a traditional trade show.
Right, trying to scan as many badges as possible.
Exactly. But hyperscaler summits are not designed for your product pitch. They are designed around AWS growth initiatives.
So you have to align with their goals.
If your booth messaging and your team's conversations cannot explicitly translate how your software accelerates AWS's specific strategic priorities for that quarter, you are just expensive noise on the floor.
So what is the actual playbook then? If broad event marketing and generic enablement don't work with hyperscalers, how do you actually get those first deals registered?
Well, Dilhani Pelihapitiya laid out an incredibly focused strategy for AWS co-selling. She advises stripping away the broad enablement entirely.
Okay.
Instead, you pick one single geographic region. You find one early champion within that specific AWS GEO who is hungry and relentless.
And then you just hyper-focus on them.
Yes. You throw all your resources at getting that first joint win across the line fast. You document the exact mechanics of that win wire we just talked about. And then you use that single proven GEO as the blueprint to scale to the next region.
So it's really about engineering proof points that scale rather than just scaling assumptions across the whole map.
Exactly. But that level of geographic and relational targeting requires intense manual discipline, which is exactly why the entire industry is currently scrambling to find a shortcut.
And let me guess, the assumed shortcut for managing all this complexity, the CRMs, the hyperscaler portals, the different partner models, is artificial intelligence.
Of course it is. AI is the gravitational pull of literally every B2B conversation right now. Everyone wants to layer AI over their ecosystem to just automate the pipeline math.
But Kyle E. posted a massive red flag about this approach on LinkedIn. He warned that if you apply AI over the broken attribution models and scattered spreadsheets we talked about earlier, You do not get digital transformation.
No, you get a mess.
Right, because AI cannot magically invent partner data that was never entered into the CRM in the first place. If the deal source field is blank, AI will just hallucinate a narrative.
Kyle called it expensive KN with a better user interface.
That is such a good line. You are literally just generating bad partner insights at a much faster speed.
The tool only accelerates the underlying reality. But even when the data foundation is solid, you know, the human implementation of AI in partnerships is often deeply flawed.
How so?
Teresa Karagol highlighted a massive disconnect in how ecosystem teams are adopting these tools. Leadership buys an AI license, they run a generic training session on how to write prompts, and 2 weeks later, the partner managers are right back to their old manual workflows.
Because generic training doesn't actually solve daily friction. Karagol argues that AI enablement has to be tied to hyper-specific role-level workflows.
Yes, you can't just teach them to ask ChatGPT to write a poem.
Right. You have to teach a partner manager how to use AI to physically prep for a 9 a.m. Tuesday orderly business review with a top-tier MSP.
Exactly. Show them how the AI can pull usage data from Salesforce, cross-reference it with support tickets in Zendesk, and synthesize the account overlaps from Crossbeam.
To generate a working, actionable brief in 30 minutes, if AI isn't an operational lever for their daily reality, it's just a distraction.
And we have to remember the context of that daily reality, too.
Yeah.
Because B2B revenue is inherently a multiplayer game.
Sugata Sanyal shared a fascinating conversation with MarTech expert Scott Brinker that gets to the core of this multiplayer concept.
Yeah, coordinating a network of ISVs, resellers, and GSIs across different regions is a massive logistical puzzle. Sanyal and Brinker point out that AI should not be viewed as just a single-player productivity tool to help one rep write a better email.
Right. The true power of AI in ecosystems is at the coordination layer. So the partner relationship management systems, the CRMs.
AI can encode program logic, monitor compliance, and govern multi-party workflows at scale, ensuring that everyone in the network is actually operating off the same data.
And we are seeing that multiplayer coordination layer being built in real time right now. Chris Simula and Sagar T both analyzed a massive pivot happening at Salesforce with the launch of Agent Exchange.
Oh, Agent Exchange is fascinating.
Yeah, Salesforce is bringing thousands of apps and autonomous agents into a single marketplace. But the real story is how they are changing partner evaluation.
Right. Historically, you were evaluated on how many certifications your team held and your project volume.
But Salesforce is shifting that evaluation model entirely toward AI-driven customer outcomes. The metric isn't, did you deploy the software? It's, can you orchestrate AI, data, and automation to drive a measurable business result for the client?
So the technical bar is rising exponentially. The orchestration of agents, the rigorous CRM discipline, the hyperscaler portals, and this is a very heavy, highly technical load.
It is. But amidst all of this automation and infrastructure, Amos Avner provided a really vital grounding thought.
What did he say?
He reminded the market that while AI will inevitably automate the account mapping and the QBR prep and the context analysis, it can never replace the human element of a partnership.
Absolutely true.
AI cannot sit in a room, read the emotional temperature of a client, and build the trust required to forge a compelling co-story. The technology just exists to remove the friction so that the humans can actually connect and create value.
The systems orchestrate the network, but humans still have to close the gap.
Exactly. We have covered a tremendous amount of ground today, from engineering your CRM for operator mode to navigating the strict new realities of AWS and Microsoft, all the way to utilizing AI at the coordination layer.
It's a lot to process.
It is. So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you audit your own strategy this week. It comes from Mohit Bisht, and it is just a perfect synthesis of where the market is heading.
Let's hear it.
He said, your partner program is dead. AI just hasn't told you yet.
Wow. It is a stark warning, but it really captures the reality of the shift. If you are still running a traditional tiered partner program out of a spreadsheet, you are already obsolete.
The winners in this next era of B2B marketing are not managing individual partners. They are orchestrating interconnected ecosystems. The question you have to ask yourself when you open your laptop tomorrow is, are you building the infrastructure to lead your ecosystem, or are you moving so slowly that you're going to get replaced by it?
That's the question right there.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, AI, embedded B marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling.
Keep pushing the boundaries of your ecosystem and stay disciplined with your data.
Thank you so much for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe.